Hello and welcome to the Decibel Boost Podcast, the official music podcast of the website Surreal Resolution. I'm your host, Robert, and oh, dear God, Sonic, what did they do to you, man? And with me, I have.
It's always good when a ringer horse gets disqualified. That means a bunch of overprivileged rich white people are upset and mad, and that makes me very happy.
And.
Send it with a crossfire people for my drum. And then, if folks say it's the last reason we'll Joe Griffiths, you'll hear at least until the new season comes. If it will come, so.
For a while.
When is there a season two? And I actually have to watch that finale. I couldn't because of reasons that will become prominent fairly shortly.
Yeah. But let's hope they get a second season. Because, you know, it's good shit.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, I need to find out if Stupid Horse is still stupid. You know, that's important to me. Anyway, episode 128. How's everything going with all y'all lately?
Well, I'm sure everybody saw it on everywhere, but about a week ago, some asshole with a gun decided to make himself famous and shoot some people here in the city at UNC Charlotte, and unfortunately, two people died.
Oh.
Yeah, okay. That's, you know, when stuff like this happens, you kind of grow accustomed to it, but you're never ready for it when it happens where you live. Like, UNC Charlotte is about 40 minutes from where I live. It's not that far of a drive. It's a nice part of the city, too. So, you know, having some motherfucker with a gun decide to try and just make himself famous because of whatever reason, that, ugh. It just makes me sad. Makes me sad to see it. Unfortunately, I found out about that news as I was coming out of my second viewing of Avengers Endgame, because they have a little bar at the theater where there's TVs on, and there's the aerial shot of UNC Charlotte on lockdown with police cars all over the place. It's just, put me in a bit of a funk. So that night, I decided, I'm just trying to lighten the mood here, to get some comfort food, which here in where I live, it's Bojangles. So I go to Bojangles after getting gas, which involved a guy saying he just came in from Columbus and didn't have any money, and tried to sell me some crappy Bluetooth headphones. Don't do drugs, kids.
That's obvious.
Yeah, so I go to Bojangles, and I notice it's busy in there behind the counter, because long drive-through line, and they're kind of shorthanded. So I put in my order, you know, box of chicken for the next couple days, and I think it was the manager there said that they didn't have enough chicken to fulfill the order, so
they
pretty much just gave me another box of tenders. You know, little chicken tenders with barbecue sauce.
Okay, that's...
And a half gallon of lemonade.
Ooh.
And a drink for making me waiting, because I was waiting in line for about 5 minutes and nobody showed up. So let that be a lesson to you, kids. Be nice to people who work in service and food.
Exactly.
Good things will happen when you're nice. Yeah. I know, I work in hotels, and you'd be surprised how many people just don't give a crap about... anyway. So as for the rest of my week, working and working some more. Had a busy friggin' weekend. Although I did manage to catch a little bit of the horse racing. It's funny when rich people get upset.
Who even watches horse racing in 2019 anymore?
Rich people. Lots and lots of rich people. So, seeing all them just standing out in the rain and getting rightfully upset, or unrightfully upset, because, your ringer lost in the 65-1 shot one. A lot of people went home with a lot of money, and a lot more people lost some money. And that makes me happy. But, So, couple of days off coming up, which means I'm going to go see Avengers Endgame again. And then again, because I got to see it in Dolby Cinema and in IMAX. And then I'm going to see Detective Pikachu because I'm insane and I want to use my AMC A-List membership while I can because, yeah, I want to get out and start doing stuff for me. You hear?
Pika-pee, motherfuckers.
We're never going to get those outtakes. I'm so sad.
But seriously, though, it's 2019. Rich people need to get with the times. It's all about watching anime horse running now. Especially with their horse girls.
Yeah, it's a shame Special Week didn't make the cut in the Derby. There's always the prick in the streaks, though.
Clearly. Anyway, Mark, what about you?
Well, we'll start and add this. In case you didn't hear any cat noises in the following few weeks, that's because, as of now, my cat's moved out. Where live my sister now.
Aww.
Which is gonna be permanent, but I know some people. I know I have to break this down in case y'all wondering. Where are the cats? I have to break it down gently, so we'll end up well navigating with you somehow.
That's what I have Instagram for.
There's one thing I want to mention last week, like. Last week, after we recorded the podcast, a certain trailer came out, and, oh boy, and here's the thing that I talked to you about, Rob. You talked about the music used in the trailer, and then I mentioned to you that one certain Canadian rapper sampled Sonic 06.
Oh, yeah, that was a thing that happened.
And I was like, I was saying, what can we use in the Nexon trailer? I know, let's use Drake. If this shit does happen, it'd be like...
don't even, you know they would. It's like, you know, I'm not even asking for, like... It's like you don't even have to do something like, I don't know, a symphonic rendition of, like, Green Hill Zone. You can just choose one of the obnoxious Crush 40 songs from, like, any of the 3D games that would have been a better fit. Jeez. Fucking Live and Learn, man. That'll get you billions of millennial dollars right there. If we have any left after all our endgame watching.
And I might as well get this out early before we do it. So... And yet, instead of the song used Gangsta Paradise, then JoJo did.
Yes, this is true.
Yeah, I'm done now.
Yeah, anyway, as for me, well, I ended up getting a new phone for the lovely price of free $99. Don't ask me how, I have my ways. Although I feel like the universe might have been playing a little bit of give and take, because, yeah, it got me a new phone... But yesterday, my HDMI switcher decided to shit the bed. And I'm at least partially convinced it was because of the bad lightning storms that have been happening around here lately. Because I swapped it out. I had a 5-way. I swapped it out with a 3-way one that I had, you know, on call. And it works fine. So clearly, I don't know whatever happened. I guess it shorted out the box, if that's even possible. Which is weird, because it's not actually plugged into any electrical outlets. It's just... Straight into the TV, and then all the plugs in there. I don't understand technology.
What brand was it?
I don't remember. I have the old one sitting in like a shelf somewhere. I'll probably grab it during the break and explain it to you.
How much did you pay for it?
I think it might have been somewhere in the realm of $48.50. Because I'm actually looking it up on Amazon, and I think that was roughly the same price. That's the weird thing. I'm pretty sure someone bought it for me instead of me buying it directly because I couldn't find it in my Amazon orders. It's a weird thing. But, yeah, there's that. Just played a lot of Resident Evil 2 and beat that. So, yeah, I tried making churros. That was a struggle and a half, and I don't even think they came out better than just okay. I mean, they taste fine, but dear God, those are not churros that would look appetizing to present. Always self-critical. I'm sure round two will go much better. Anyway, that's basically about it for me, and now it's time to jump into the new song discussion for the past week, which, we're gonna say, it seems a bit light in certain respects. There is some hype, but we literally only have 5 songs here. You'll see how everything shakes out. So, yeah, as always, there will be a playlist down in the description, so you can follow along with what these various songs are that we are talking about. First, let's start off with a little bit of a noodly instrumental prog here. Looks like the guys in Chon, or Chon, I'm not sure how the name is actually pronounced, they're dropping a self-titled album on June 7th. And we got a new single here called Petal. And of course, as always, it's a very pretty sounding song, ain't it? I mean, it's got all the prog technicalities with the super, like, you know, jittery drum patterns, the really, like, you know, dynamic tapping, you know, rhythms and everything. Lots of those hammer-on pull-off taps and all that. All clean, also kind of heavy on, like, mild synthetic processing, especially, like, you know, in some of the verses and stuff. Bass grooves out the wazoo. It's nice, you know, you can vibe to it.
Yeah, to quote Mr. Crash Thompson when he was talking about Astronoid, this is some fine, chill prog guitar work. It almost sounds like it could be a track Radwimps would do for a movie like Your Name. It's good. It's very good.
That's one way of putting it. Never actually thought about that. By the way, how about that next Makoto Shinkai film?
It looks like a Makoto Shinkai film, yeah.
I mean, it's probably going to make lots of money. Anyway, let's move on to our second track here. The past week's entry into the Adult Swim Singles program. But before I do that, I actually want to give a quick shout-out. It turns out the last episode actually was heard by Fire Tools.
Really?
Oh. Okay.
Yeah, they left a very enthusiastic comment down in the comments section. Which, let me just say, how happy I am to finally have a comment that's not weird spam asking me about, like, search engine optimization.
Only took this long, right?
But hey, I'm happy about it. And obviously they seem very happy about it as well. So, yeah, with that out of the way, let's see what's going on this week. Looks like this past week's single is from More Mother, who you might recognize from being featured on the last version of this compilation, and thankfully with a song that is not the length of Avengers Endgame.
Oh yeah, that's right, they did that shit. Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, that was like the 3-hour concert that was put up as a single last year, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was from, I want to say it was Levitation. I think it might have been a different set. Oh wait, it was Moogfest. That's where it was. It was a Moogfest.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Moogfest.
But this time, it's much more manageable. Her track contributed here is called On the Range. And it's actually a collaboration with a production duo called Zonal, consisting of a producer called The Bug, along with none other than industrial music iconoclast Justin Broderick, best known for his multitude of projects including Godflesh, Jesu, JK Flesh, and presumably many others that I'm forgetting about right now. So the track is called On the Range, which sadly has no relation to the Disney film of the same name. I know, we're very disappointed. And yeah, it's definitely a more manageable track. It starts with a lot of really like fuzzy thumping kick and bass distortion. That basically drives the song primarily with the really creepy, distorted vocals from More Mother talking about, like, you know, bunch of dead pigs on the range, which I'm assuming those dead pigs is probably a metaphor for something. You could probably figure out what. It just kind of rumbles on like that. It gets under your skin. It's super creepy and atonal, and the way her vocals are layered and saturated with distortion in a weird way, it kind of reminds me of, like, Deftones circa Around the Fur. Like, you know how Chino Moreno gave performances on that album where, like, his mouth was basically, like, so full of saliva, shit, and distortion that you could only make out, like, 20% of the words? That's kind of how it gets here sometimes. It's appropriately creepy and unnerving. The kind of stuff you listen to in the dark with the lights off.
I think that this, to me, this reminds me of, like, a very lo-fi Ghost Main track, only Like, still hype, but not as fat, but not as energetical. Like, it's got this very slow down, creepy tone with the vocals, which I try to make out some of the time, but can't because I didn't waste the time doing that. And the Madonna's pretty awesome. I definitely dig this, even though if one more just suddenly listen to this and wonder why I didn't go to the 3 and 3.5 hour track they did last year, because I tried, but this was manageable. It's certainly the better rap track I heard this week, or at least rap adjacent. We'll figure out why.
Talk about a segue. So, yeah, we got our third track here. And for a while, this was basically going to be the last song we discussed before the hypening. But we have this to deal with. So, yeah, as you might remember from a few weeks ago, was it last month? Anyway, Logic. He's apparently got a new album that's, you know, not the book soundtrack, called Confessions of a Dangerous Mind. We still don't know what the date is yet, but we got another single that's supposed to be off that album called Homicide. And for this one, he recruited a fellow white rapper who raps really, really fast, Eminem.
Yeah.
Okay, Logic, look. I get that a lot of people don't like you. There's a pretty prominent pushback against the notion of Logic as some sort of significant figure in the rap industry. Even IDK pushes back against Logic on that last song we heard from him.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, I like Logic generally, at least more than I don't, but, oh dear God, I don't know what's even up with this song. I mean, okay, both of them rap really, really fast.
Yeah.
Super fast, in fact. Too fast for you to measure. Every other line is filled with, you know, diss after diss and punchline after punchline. Too many for you to catalog, but I don't know. I feel like listening to this song, like, I guess Logic always was kind of Eminem adjacent, but I feel like Eminem's worst instincts are kind of rubbing up on Logic here. Like, with the awkward sound effects and how at the end of one of Logic's verses, he pitches his voice up to this really annoying nasal, like, fucking whine. Like, he's doing the thing where Eminem does shitty voices in his music, and it gets fucking, like, just, I don't even know what's happening. And then Eminem just, you know, comes in, and it's like, you know, fine, there's lots of, what the fuck is he talking about, like, bear hugging a terrier? What does that have to do with anything?
I don't fucking know.
Oh, and then there's a real shitty part of this song, where it literally ends with, like, 30 seconds of a clip of fucking Chris D'Elia doing an Eminem impression, which that was the point where this fucking, like, tanked for me. I think Chris D'Elia is a fucking shitty garbage-ass comedian. Sorry, not sorry, I guess. God, it's like, what the... Look, Logic, I'm sorry, but this song was a total misfire. I don't even know why. Why?
Okay. Okay, look, Logic. Now, most people, they read something not like you as much. I don't want to be the guy that not like you. I mean, you seem like a good rapper, but it's like, the way you begin, it's like, you say where you come from? These balls, nigga. Like, oh God, please shut up. Like, I was like, this is not going to be funny. And of course, he raps like, you know, he was like, okay. Then it went down once Eminem came in, because like, I think he's doing the same shit he always does. He's speaking fast, all that type of shit, telling you how, like, maybe you can rap better than I can. Like, okay, please shut up. I was so annoyed. And that last part, which I'm like, who the fuck is, like, I heard about that impression, like, okay, that's the impression? That's just lame. It's really not that funny. And...
yeah, this is just... yeah. Yeah. Go ahead.
This is. I'm this sucks. There.
Yeah. Yeah. This is pretty much the rap equivalent of a shred guitarist getting another shred guitarist on a guest spot, but not like good guitarists like, you know, Andy James and Tosin Nabasi. I'm talking like Yngwie Malmsteen and
I was gonna say that exact name.
It's all technique with no melody, and it's not very good.
It's like, let me put it like this. If getting the entirety of the Wu-Tang Clan on a track is like the peak of Logic's career, this feels like the nadir on the opposite end. But that's all we have to say on that. So now we can move on to this late breaking news. But first, anybody want some whiskey? This is a very fine import, aged for a fuckload amount of time. I've been saving it for a special occasion, so everybody wants some? Mark, Alex? Well, Alex would really care about this.
Yeah, but I'm going to guess you've been saving that for maybe 13 years?
That's right. I already opened it up once because of the release of Kingdom Hearts 3, and it looks like I have to release it again because, ladies and gentlemen... It's Tool time.
That was lame.
Look, I'm going to make that the thumbnail anyway. I had to justify it in the podcast, okay?
But fine, yes. But just Photoshop Mayor James Keenan's head over Tim Allen's body. Please don't give him any screen time.
I will find a high quality picture of the Mohawk. But yes, this past weekend, Tool began their latest run of shows at Welcome to Rockville, which I assume all the people who were up there thoroughly enjoyed it. I'm sure freaking, Rocked Reviews did.
Yeah, isn't Luke lucky?
Of course. And of course, one of the big type sets was from Tool, who have been making significantly more moves in the push towards maybe there's a new album this year, with the, Facebook banner marked 2019, and the appearance of Spotify profiles for the band, despite the lack of appearance of actual music. I mean, come on, King Crimson could put all their shit on Apple Music and you can't do that yet? Come on. But yeah, so with them playing their big set at Welcome to Rockville, they actually did, in fact, after 13 years, debut two brand new songs. And you can bet that unlike that one time I saw them in my senior year of high school, lots of people got lots of video and posted it on the internet. I'm not even kidding about that, by the way. One of the freaking concert workers called me out on it.
Oh. Thankfully, this time around, we have moved on from, what was it, potatoes? We had potatoes back then, right?
I think I don't understand the context here.
The whole potato quality thing back when we had flip phones.
That shit.
0.7 megapixel cameras at like 320 by 240.
Oh, yeah.
Nowadays, we can shoot everything in 4K.
Yeah, we got that we got that top quality HD 60, 120 frames per second, however many frames we're on now.
240 slow-mo.
Clearly. So, yeah, let's talk about these here two songs. The first one here is a track called Descending. Yeah, single word title. And if I had to hazard a guess as to the overall feel, this kind of reminds me a bit of, like, some of the slower material on, like, Lateralis or something. That's just kind of where my mind goes.
Yeah.
Because I remember, like, 10,000 Days, a lot more of those songs being more straightforward and energetic. But this one has a relatively more relaxed set of grooves and rhythms to it. Definitely lots and lots of the bass and the guitars playing those odd intervals and accentuations to the point where you can't tell which is which. Even when it's distorted, they like kind of trade off each other. Of course, Maynard with his signature vocal style, and of course that whatever you call that specific like vocal processing effect that he always has on his voice. You know the one, right? Where it like echoes and it kind of seems like it's fading out as he's singing.
Yeah. Yeah, this also reminds me a lot of Lateralis with the heavy drop D chords and the jungle groove with Danny Carey's drum work. It's not a bad thing, but then there's the whole instrumental break in the latter half of the song, and it's a vibe and a half. Whew, especially with all those tour visuals and the lighting. I don't know if any drugs were taken in the crowd, but if they were, I bet they were seeing some crazy stuff.
Don't forget about a lot of the cutoffs of, like, the 1 and 2 and 3 and 4, 1, you know, those kind of, like, weird choppy rhythms. Of course, the interplay between the hard pounds of the tom and the actual guitar chord chugs and everything. That discordant solo, you know, it is what it is. And you can't forget about the gong. At least I think that was a gong. I'm pretty sure I heard that somewhere in there.
Yeah, we're just going by live recording, so we can't hear everything quite yet.
Yeah, kind of surprised that there's this decent enough quality. And then, of course, there's the other track called Invincible, which, again, kind of echoes a similar sort of, not super, like, you know, hard-hitting, but kind of more a relaxed sort of groove. You know, the intro guitar thing kind of bounces on, like, a 4-4 going into a 3-4 kind of rhythm. Occasionally segueing from, like, eighth notes to three, like, quarter note kind of thing. You know, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the tropical, like, clicking in the background, which I'm not sure if it's, like, a metronome or maybe some other kind of tropical percussion. I don't want to say it's steel pan drums. I feel like it's something else.
No, it's probably just some kind of drum samples because, you know, Danny Carey has that crazy drum kit with all those electronic pads on his kit.
Mm-mm, those sweet, sweet pads.
Yeah.
And speaking of the drums, you notice something I noticed is that the actual drum work here, at least as far as kind of like the kick and some of the sticking patterns, almost kind of seems to heavily accentuate like the actual kind of the backbeat of everything more. Like there's a heavy stomping at like parts of the beat where it kind of grounds the rhythm in some of its more complex sections, including like as it swells into the full band. All the distorted bass, they're surprisingly in sync with each other as it plays off of, like, you know, those particular guitar rhythms and everything. And, you know, those kind of, like, gasping hi-hat rhythms and shit. It sounds, like I said, we're just going off cell phone footage. We're waiting for a studio stuff to hit, which could very well be soon if they're going to do something with those Spotify profiles.
Yeah. Invincible, it sort of builds off of that solid, you know, intro bass groove from Justin and that 7-4 drum groove from Danny. And it leads into this crazy syncopated drum fill with a lot of those chugging guitar chords from Adam. And then there's just this groove switch up at the 10.5-minute mark where the guitar takes over on the lead control. And it's just, both these tracks, very solid, full on good. Both total about, 23, 24 minutes of music?
Just about.
Yeah, so, when is that album coming out, Bernard?
It'll happen.
Well, it better. Well, I've been waiting, you know, since I was in middle school for it.
Yes, we've all been waiting. But, yeah, that basically about does it for the new Sun discussion. Gonna take a quick break, and when we come back, there will be quite a bit of news. Who doesn't like news?
Lots of news.
Yes, lots and lots and lots of the good and funny news coming your way.
We're back. So what better way to start off the news than with a couple of album announcements? So, first one of these here. If you'll remember a couple years ago in 2017, Mark, Alex, and myself all had Tyler, the Creator's Flower Boy on our Best of the Year lists. One of those rare moments where we're all in perfect sync with each other.
Yep.
You know, aside from Kendrick Lamar's Damn.
Yeah, that one of the jewels.
You know, that other albums came out too.
Yeah, like, I think we'll see with that, with Tyler, Kendrick, and Run the Jewels, because we put that on 2017 list as well.
Ah, yes, of course, that. But it looks like one of these guys is going to have a new album coming out this year, and that is Mr. Tyler, the Creator. As a matter of fact, it's coming out this month, and he decided to tell us this morning.
Yeah.
Well, by us, we mean the collective internet. Because, you know, that's how he is. He gets all cryptic, and then he tells us about the album like 2 weeks before. So, yeah, his follow-up to Flower Boy is coming out May 17th, and the album title is Igor. You know, like the guy that assists mad scientists in, like, pulpy sci-fi stories. But, yeah, so we got that to look forward to. Possibly another shared year-end favorite, especially if it keeps up the quality that Flower Boy did. And we even have two different versions of the album artwork. You know, one being an illustration by Louis Rossignol. Apparently that's the alternative version. And then the other, which kind of looks like more Tyler's general aesthetic, which it's just kind of a cut, like almost kind of like a cardboard cutout picture of himself against the sort of dirty pink background.
Yep. With,
you know, the album title underneath it. Tyler.
Yes, yes. All songs written, produced, and arranged by Tyler damn it. I can't say his last name.
I'm not even sure I ever say it right either. I just assume it's Okonma. That's my best guess.
Yeah. Tyler Okonma. I think that's how you say it. I don't know. We need a pronunciation guide. Okonma. Somebody help us. We're stupid.
Clearly. I choose to pronounce it, when are we getting season 2 of the Jellies? I mean, you know, I'm looking forward to the album, but, you know, we need something to fill the void left behind by Laser Wolf.
Yeah.
But, yes. So, we got that to look forward to. And speaking of big hip-hop album announcements, Mr. Danny Brown. Remember Atrocity Exhibition? That happened? That was hype as hell?
Yeah.
Yep.
He's kept on trucking in the meantime, you know, plenty of festivals. I'm pretty sure he appeared on Hot Ones.
He did.
He also, you know, streams on Twitch where he plays Persona 5 and talks about how he wants to bang the teacher. We can only assume we're going to get a redux of that when Persona 5 The Royal Edition comes out.
And, yeah, now he's going to try and do the do with, I don't even know her name. Continue.
Yeah, so, but in the background of all that, he's been teasing some new material that he already had a follow-up to Atrocity Exhibition that he was working on, and teasing that it would be, it would feature the involvement of a very legendary name in the hip-hop industry. And so, while we don't have a date, we can confirm some preliminary details about the album in question. First off, we know that the follow-up to Atrocity Exhibition will be titled You Know What I'm Saying. Letter U and no punctuation apart from a question mark. All one word. And as far as the hip-hop icon in question, the album will be executive produced, keep that in mind, executive produced, by none other than Q-Tip of A Tribe Called Quest.
Ooh, now that is, that's very, very interesting. Nice. Yeah, that's very interesting to know about that.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as the actual hands-on production, you know, the beats and everything, his regular collaborator Paul White will be featured on the album, as well as famed rapper JPEG Mafia. So you just know there is going to be some wild and crazy beats on this thing. Will there be anything that tops the furious insanity of Ain't It Funny? That very well could happen.
We shall wait whenever we hear something from him, because we got no release date.
Yes, we shall wait and see.
But anyway, while we got all that to look forward to, let's talk about some prestige TV for a second. And no, we're not going to talk about how dark Game of Thrones is, or how there was a coffee cup in the background of a scene from Starbucks, or how John Oliver was right in saying in 2 weeks, HBO is utterly fucked.
That's...
he's not necessarily wrong.
Yeah, that's true, because it's like... Westworld, that's for nerds. We got Insecure, that's for black people, which is good also. You still watching that, it's a good show. We got, what else they got?
I heard Barry was pretty good.
Yeah, Barry. Oh. They got Barry. They got Feist News Daily. They got The Shop with LeBron James. And they got my $15 because I tried to do a free trial, but they're too smart. I couldn't fool them. So I'm out $15 for a month.
The fiends. But we're not here to talk about HBO programming. We're here to talk about Showtime, which is a network that exists. Yes. I don't know.
They got Desus and Mero, what they got.
Yeah, let's go with them. Yeah,
there's Desus and Mero, which is, I mean, I haven't watched it because I haven't subscribed to Showtime. I haven't thought about them since, like, you know, Ash versus Evil Dead. Oh, no, wait, that was Stars. Fuck, I can't even remember. Did they have that TV show from, you know, Seth MacFarlane's production company where, like, fucking Patrick Stewart plays, like, a news anchor or something?
They did. No, wait, hold on. I think those Stars. That was on Stars that got canceled, too.
Yeah. Showtime has boxing. It's more for people like me who are into that kind of stuff. But
boxing, so boxing is decent and marrow.
Yeah, so looks like Showtime has announced a new anthology project that they got in the works. It's called Omniverse, and they describe it as a limited half-hour anthology series examining the many doors of perception. The first season, and this is really where it's a fall me here, apparently it explores the notion of ego through the alternative reality of Kanye West.
That's kind of fitting. He said ego. I mean,
okay, well, so
yeah.
Let me see if I can piece this together here for a second. So, okay, so we know that Kanye West has evolved. It stars, for some reason, Jaden Smith playing a young Kanye West in an alternate reality. Whatever that really ends up meaning. We do know that it, apparently it also features the involvement of writer Lee Sung-jin, who apparently also has several other writing credits to his name, such as HBO Silicon Valley, a recent Netflix series, Tuca and Birdie, which, by the way, can I say something? Is that show like a BoJack spinoff or not? Because its art style looks very BoJack-like.
I don't think it's I think it's just meant to be similar, but without any real connection. It's from a different crew and different cast, so yeah, I'm gonna say this has nothing to do with BoJack. It's just a different kind of animated show for grown-ups.
Sure looks like it to me. But anyway, so yeah, with him handling scripting and stuff, and to hear him describe the show himself, Omniverse is not set in our world, nor about our world's Kanye West, as we aim to add a new spin on alternate realities, consciousness, and push the limits of half-hour narrative. I mean, if you're going to push the limits of half-hour narrative, does that mean you're going to have, like, a 41-minute episode that has no commercials, Jaden Smith is exploring a creepy house as he tries to get a piano from a guy named Teddy Perkins? Played by Kanye West in whiteface.
Black Monday. That was the show I was trying to think of earlier. They got Black Monday. Excellent show.
Oh, yeah. I think that's the one with Don Cheadle in it. With Don Cheadle in it, I think.
I mean, I assume so. I don't know. I don't watch as much peak TV as the internet keeps telling me I'm supposed to. But, yeah, this is a thing that's happening. I don't know. It could be amusing. You know, if they do it well. But you never know.
It could be interesting.
Anyway, speaking of interesting, who wants to talk about the exact opposite of that? With finances and bankruptcy.
Okay, I'll go ahead and do this. Because, well, I talked about it when it first broke, so I guess it's my obligation to mention it again. Whoopee, iHeartMedia is emerging from Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection. They've cleared their debt from $16 billion to $5.75 billion, and they've spun off Clear Channel Outdoor Holdings as its own company. Hooray! They will continue to destroy the ecosystem of radio as we know it. Yay!
In the words of one Mr. Dan Olson, what else can I say but yikes.
Yeah, this is not really exciting news, nor am I super thrilled about it because I fucking hate iHeartRadio, but whatever, it had to be addressed because, well, it's a follow-up to a story we talked about a long while ago, so yeah, that's not really interesting. But you know what is?
The ongoing logistical nightmare fuckfest that is Woodstock 50?
Let's go down the stairs.
Boy,
yeah.
Howdy. Yes.
We're still talking about it, people.
And we might still be talking about it for a while, because this just doesn't want to die. So, the headline from Rolling Stone on April 30th says this. Woodstock organizer to financial backer. They don't have a right to cancel it. People with money can do whatever the hell they want. Like, bet on horses. And it's funny when they lose it. So, quick recap of this story as it's broken over the last couple weeks. Woodstock 50, planned for Watkins Glen, New York. Tickets never went on sale. Their main financier pulled out. But Michael Lang is insisting that the show will go on. So, yeah, here's the updates. Quote, "We have yet to understand why financier Dentsu Aegis would try to prevent the festival from happening by seemingly undermining us in this way. It is one thing to decide for oneself that it is best to move on, but it is entirely another thing to try and close the door on us. Woodstock never belonged to Dentsu, so they don't have a right to cancel it." Again, people with money. They can do whatever the crap they want. And per an attorney for the side of Michael Lang, they have confirmed that the festival will continue as planned. Somehow.
Wait, hang on. I think you missed something here, because I recall reading this elsewhere on the internet, but doesn't the attorney in question have some rather unsavory political connections?
Do go on, because I can't find it in this Rolling Stone piece.
And, of course, of all things, I'm pretty sure it was Metal Sucks that posted it, Okay, so the legal counsel here consists of basically a guy named Mark Kasowitz, who has served as a lawyer for the current president of the United States.
Oh, fuck.
Oh, and we know what happens to his attorneys. They get sent to prison.
It's not a matter of if, but when.
But that was a headline from a week ago. We're only reporting on it because that's how we do it. So let's give you some more updates. Going to this TMZ page, headline of the year. I'm sure somebody's been waiting for this. I'm going to try and do this in my Nash voice. Woodstock 50 Festival collapsed over massive crowd shrinkage.
Oh.
Yeah. But I'm sure you already know about that. I mean, this is TMZ we're talking about. They wouldn't have anything new. Oh, wait. A new headline has emerged. Creator says investors sabotaging Fest. Vows show will go on.
Oh, boy.
So, yeah. Apparently, this is now an attempt of sabotage, per Michael Lang. Because that's a great way to assure you're going to get a great return, isn't it? So, Lang is claiming, for some unknown reason, Dentsu blocked ticket sales, even though, you know, they could have sold them at any friggin' time. And is claiming that Dentsu blocked the ticket sales, even though the festival had obtained all necessary permits. So why didn't the tickets go on sale? And wasn't there any confirmation from, I don't know, your attorney. Yeah.
Oh, boy. So
and it gets deeper because Lang is saying that Dentsu began interfering with the talent lineup, even telling bands if they backed out, Dentsu would help them land a gig playing the Summer Olympics in 2020. Now, I'm not sure where that came from, but I'm guessing, considering these kinds of people love to pull shit out of their asses, he pulled this shit out of his ass.
Mm.
And Lang is claiming Dentsu, quote, illegally swept approximately $17 million from the festival bank account, leaving the festival in peril. You know, like all the money from the ticket sales. Oh, wait. Or the money that you paid the artist that you're not getting back. See what happens when you try to go up against people with money? They have non-crooked attorneys. And
in other words, listen, y'all, it's a sabotage. Listen, all y'all, it's a sabotage.
Yes. And of course, reps from Dentsu Aegis told TMZ, quote, as financial partner, we had the customary rights one would expect to protect a large investment. After we exercised our contractual right to take over and subsequently cancel the festival, we simply recovered the funds in the festival bank account, funds we originally put in as a financial partner. Further, tickets cannot go on sale for an event prior to obtaining a mass gathering permit, which has still not been granted. So, on one hand, you have the side of the 70-year-old hippie trying to make a quick nostalgia buck. And on the other hand, you have Japanese businessmen with more money than God trying to protect their investments by, you know, taking back their investments. So, how will the show go on? Quoting Billboard, the headline reads, to save Woodstock 50, Michael Lang plans to raise $30 million by Friday.
What?
As in,
this Friday?
By 2 days from now, if it goes up on Wednesday. So,
Yeah.
You know what this is giving me flashbacks to? Remember DashCon?
Oh.
The organizers being all, okay, guys, we need everyone here to PayPal us money as soon as possible so we can give them, like, over the weekend. Because, you know, it's not like PayPal takes 2 to 3 days for transactions to process.
Oh, boy. So, here we are now. Michael Lang trying to fund this entire festival on behalf of, well, himself and CID Entertainment. But the company hasn't confirmed that they're actually going to produce the festival. So, $30 million is needed to stage this event at Watkins Glen, in addition to the $30 million Dentsu spent on the artists, which are not getting back. I have to keep mentioning that because you already paid them.
Yeah, they're like, you paid us.
You don't pay people until you get the permits. It's not hard. Like, oh, God, this is so stupid.
It's so funny, but it is so stupid.
Yeah.
Mine none of them stupid.
So one of Lang's people told Billboard that a man named Dan Berkowitz and his CID Entertainment firm would be replacing Superfly as a festival producer, but there has been no confirmation on that. So either expect something to break at the last minute or expect the guy to go, we ain't touching this. No way. And of course, Lang and his partner Greg Park approached Live Nation and AEG about this, and they passed on it because when the two biggest concert promoters in the country are looking at your event and going,
nah.
That's a bad sign.
They're like, hell no, he doing this shit.
Yeah, that's a very bad sign. Now, this Billboard piece mentions that it's unclear if the artists announced for the festival are still obligated to perform, whether it goes on or not. Hell, they might just do it in a parking lot somewhere.
That sounds about right.
So, reading this through, representatives from two agencies with the artists book at the festival say their contract is with Dentsu and Amplify Live and not with Michael Lang and Woodstock 50. However, Mark Kasowitz disagrees, saying, quote, the artists' agreements are with Woodstock 50 LLC, and the festival has not been canceled and preparations are continuing. Are you sure you want to piss off people with money and not crooked lawyers again?
Jesus, you know, I mean, remember what happened the last time a fucking scam artist tried to piss off people with money adjacent to a music festival?
Seems so long ago. Over 2 years ago.
Oh, boy. Yeah, so this is where we stand now. And going to the Woodstock website, tickets are still not on sale. However, on the splash page, oh, this is rich. Thank you, Woodstock Nation. Because everyone has to have their own nation now. Like, yeah, like a nation, a universe, a galaxy.
A squad.
Stupid buzzwords. Yeah, and there's a bunch of quotes in here which have not been, are not sourced with any people on here. So, by all we know, some intern could have written all this. And, yeah. This is where we end things for now. I'm sure by next week it's going to get even crazier. And hopefully more legal, because, pissing off people with money is bad enough. Pissing off Japanese businessmen with a lot of money, that's just, you're risking your own death, okay? Expect bad things to happen if you don't shape up, okay? I'm just telling you right now, Michael Lang, if you hear this, quit while you're ahead. You're about 3 miles behind, so just quit. Quit, move on, cancel it, save your money, plan this again, I don't know, a year before you die. Just, you done goofed. You done really goofed, okay? Yeah. This is getting so bad, we might end up getting Fyre Festival 2. And who knows, maybe you might write a tell-all book all about this.
There's a
segue up in here.
So, yeah, what would all this festival talk be without another update in the Fyre Festival post-game? I guess you could say this is the post... This is the far from home to the Fyre Festival Infinity Saga. But, yeah, so, as you might remember from last time, Mr. Billy McFarland is serving a 6-year sentence in a correctional institute in Otisville, New York. Meanwhile, we've been all enjoying the fruits of his dumbassery, courtesy of Netflix and Hulu's documentaries, with the Netflix one birthing one of the greatest meme figures of all time, Mr. Andy King, who was fully prepared to get on this flight, get on his knees, and suck dick for water. Also, apparently he was at Eric Andre's birthday celebration, so, you know, I guess they're cool. Okay. But what else is he doing besides, you know, hanging out in prison and being friends with the situation from Jersey Shore? Well, apparently, yeah, he's been writing a book about it. So, per a report from New York Magazine, apparently he's been spending his time in prison writing out pages to a forthcoming memoir, because a memoir is something you definitely write when you're in your mid-20s. Or is he in late 20s? I don't fucking care. So, writing out memoir pages longhand, and then sending them to his Russian model girlfriend, Anastasia Eremenko, who you might remember from appearing in, I think she appeared in both documentaries. It was just the Hulu one. I think it was the Hulu one, at least. So, currently, the anticipated length is about 800 handwritten pages. And she even reached out back in February to writer and editor Josh Rabb. She was hoping to bring him in to edit McFarland's book, which And I need to stress something here. Pretty much every article I saw about this memoir used pretty much a version of the phrase that we're citing from The Consequence of Sound Peace. So McFarlane's book, which, quote, "we shit you not," is tentatively titled Prometheus, the God of Fire. And yes, it's Prometheus, but Prometheus, like Mythbusters, the God of Fire, as in the festival.
Well, ways to make your title sound like the name of one of the most divisive movies of 2012.
Yeah, you know, it's almost like the movie Prometheus in that it'll be an unnecessarily long, uncompelling explanation to something that we got more entertainment out of in other better works. Sorry, I just don't like Prometheus or Alien Covenant. Fight me, nerds. But let's hear how New York Magazine piece explains it as well. So, quoting from them, "the book," McFarlane said, "chronicles his career from the first investment in a now shuttered startup back in 2011. I'm going to assume that's that black debit card thing he tried working on. To the FBI paying him a visit days after the festival imploded. Publicist Brandon Rubenstein provided Rab with a bullet-pointed, name-dropping list of selected stories, the sorts of great and terrible moments McFarlane planned to highlight. Actors, models, musicians, people who are only famous because their parents are, cameos from members of the Trump administration, because why the fuck not at this point? The list goes on and on. Much of McFarlane's plan centers around telling what he calls the raw story, the story he feels that the Hulu and Netflix documentaries, both released in January 2019, failed to fully depict. Okay, hang on. Are you referring to the same Netflix documentary that was almost overwhelmingly compiled of footage collected by the Fuck Jerry production team that you plan to release as a positive tie-in documentary should the festival have ever turned out a success in the weird alternate reality where it may have happened, possibly? I doubt it. Like, you filmed yourself committing a massive bullshit fraud-ass scheme at every conceivable angle, just hours upon hours upon days of footage of every step of it, and you're gonna sit here and claim that, you're gonna sit here and pull the fake news defense.
They lying. No, they not. It was for the company that you were part of. They didn't lie, you just...
jeez.
He says this is going to be the raw story. Considering some of the stuff that happened, I think going in raw is the worst possible move. You got to have some protection around you.
It's going to be reality. It'll have the rawness of MTV Unplugged number 2.0.
Why, Lauren?
Oh, but there's other golden quotes in here. So, between the phone conversations of Rob and Mr. McFarlane, he drew parallels between his story and other con men that he admired. In particular, he names Jordan Belfort, who you might recognize as the man played by Leonardo DiCaprio in Martin Scorsese's The Wolf of Wall Street, which, let me just say something here. So, there's this quote, okay? "And the other day I saw someone that I went to middle school with, who I guess is some kind of an entrepreneur, unironically use footage of The Wolf of Wall Street as some kind of, you know, BS social media motivational thing. I'm starting to suspect either one of two things. Either neither of these people have watched the movie, or they completely missed the point. You're not actually supposed to admire Jordan Belfort. Because, guys, if you can look at a movie where a guy ingests basically enough quaaludes to take down an elephant, tossing midgets across a table, and you see that as an ideal to strive for, then that says a lot of bullshit things about you that I'm not sure I want to think about."
Jesus Christ. Really, you do realize that the stuff he did ain't Mambo. I mean, like, he did stuff the shit he done, like, you know, like, still, like stealing from people, do a lot of drugs, you know, all the shit done with his, you know, with his, well, ex-wives, because all that shit happened, and that would drive a lot of people, but, you know, come to think of it, like, oh, boy. He could reveal another leader and be on the kind of character like the Revenant, then imagine him, and then bears.
Yes, clearly. As far as some other ancillary details, he was hoping to self-publish the work, Mr. McFarlane. McFarlane put Rob in touch with the aforementioned publicist Brandon Rubenstein. And apparently, in their discussions, Mr. Rubenstein made these weird accusations that Ryan Seacrest apparently was going to help McFarlane from jail rebrand the Fyre Festival. And apparently, they had also enlisted the aforementioned Andy King to try and do publicity for the book. Now, they were going to try and publish this shit through Amazon by the end of April, but that apparently had not happened. According to McFarlane himself, he needed to release the work quickly because, quote, the festival will not be a one-and-done event.
Okay.
It's happening again, so the original story will lose the potential to be told and set the stage if it's not done before the next events take place.
Okay, why was it put on Amazon? Because I'm pretty sure anybody could post any book digitally on Amazon, like, at any time. Even
yeah,
I could.
It's true. How else do you explain Empress Teresa?
Yeah, I know a friend who published this movie. His first book, at least, did that shit on Amazon, I think. But, yeah, like, really?
Yeah, see, we know how this stuff works.
And then what it says...
But let me just say, wow. This guy is desperate to make this shit happen again.
Really?
Talk, you know, do people not understand the notion of causality? Let me teach you a little something, Billy. If you put your hand on a hot stove, it burns. You're supposed to learn the lesson that you're not supposed to put your hand on the stove when it's hot. You're just basically, at this point, you might as well be like fucking belly flopping into an industrial grade set of deep fryers. And let me just read the last line here of the story. The last line. Rob ultimately turned down the project, because why wouldn't he, and is able to spill all the tea thanks to a botched non-disclosure agreement that the team forgot to send him.
Spilled all the tea.
All the tea. And I'm out of tea, damn.
This is gonna be good.
Why do people say that? It's not clever. It's not cute. It's just dumb.
Oh, and apparently...
You know why? Because then we can compliment it with Kermit the Frog memes. Boy. That's why.
Oh, and apparently, read the last note. The last one here says... Like, the possibility... You know, I said there could be another Fyre Festival. Apparently, Ja Rule wants to throw another, like, you? Really? Ja Rule! The same, like, did you want to be mocked again by a lot of people? Especially your arch rival 50 Cent?
Clearly. It's just like talk about not learning anything, you know?
Like, okay, Ja Rule, do you love getting L's a lot? Do you love doing this? Like, I knew your career is pretty much, well, it's pretty much dead. I mean, you ain't making no music. I mean, or even movies. Like, the last movie I seen you in was that one movie with Dave Bautista and that other guy, RVD, which he was in, like, what, 2 minutes in there, and he got shot? Like, you need help.
Just, geez, dear God, these people, do you have no shame? Just, you know, these bastards.
These fools.
But, yes. jeez. But, yeah, that basically covers all the news discussion for the past week. So now we got one last thing to take care of here. And that is the new album releases for the week of May 10th, 2019. So starting at the top, we have the newest self-titled project from the band Defeater. We got a new one from metal act Abnormality with Sociopathic Constructs. We got a new solo project from Asking Alexandria frontman Danny Warsnop with Shades of Blue.
Boo, go away.
We got a new project called Space Between from Sammy Hagar and The Circle. Whatever The Circle is. Speaking of dad rock, we got the new Whitesnake project, Flesh and Blood. We got a new Sierra album, Beauty Marks. We got a new one from Mavis Staples called We Get By. A new project from Shaggy called Wagwan. The much anticipated compliment to Tim Hecker's Konoyo project with Anoyo. And of course, last but not least, we got the newest one from Mac DeMarco with Here Comes the Cowboy. Presumably on that Old Town Road with Gon and Kiowa.
Number one song. Still. But that's still good.
So, yeah, time to clean house and get the hell out of here. So, Alex, where can they find you on the internet?
As always, Aura of Azure, where I will probably be bitching about sports for the next, how long does it go on for? Yeah, a month and a half. A lot of basketball and a lot of hockey.
Mark, what about you?
Of course, on Twitter, MacTavernMedia, and on my site, on Hype1.WordPress.com. Hopefully, I should have an anime review out probably in a few days or so. Depends on what review. I don't even know what review next, so there you go. Anything can happen.
Of course. Anyway, as for me, you can find me on Twitter, Instagram, CuriousCat, at Rob Barracuda. Email me, robert@surrealresolution.com for any questions, comments, concerns, inquiries, what have you. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast on Google Play and iTunes. New audio-only episodes go up every Wednesday. Video usually goes up by the weekend on the official YouTube channel of Surreal Resolution. Just subscribe and hit the bell tab so you're always notified whenever new stuff goes up there. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at SurrealReso, like us on Facebook, visit the website, SurrealResolution.com, where you can find our written articles, this podcast, podcast O&A, and all the other sundry jazz. Be sure to jump into our Discord chat so you can find just the finest curation of Barney the Dinosaur memes. And last but not least, shout out to the producer, Mr. E, for graciously letting me use his music for this podcast. Links to his shit down in the description. Well, thank you for joining us this week. We'll, of course, be back next time for the album roundup and, of course, whatever beautiful Woodstock 50 updates await in the next 7 days or so. So we will, of course, see you then. And until next time, why does he have realistic human teeth?
Ugh. Trying to be the best teeth in the game, huh? Cal, get into this track ready.